I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Petty Fong joins me now. Last year she published a book for young readers, Alone Together, A Curious Exploration of Loneliness. It's a great book for any reader of any age because it provides an overview of how pervasive loneliness is in our society, as well as solutions to combat it. And naming it for younger readers is important because it's something we've all felt thanks to the pandemic or even living in big cities. Yet it's not something that's talked about. A lot of literature for young readers likes to scare them into thinking being alone isn't normal or dangerous even. Getting away from that, framing it in the modern context is considerably useful. I'll ask Peg about the book and about the podcast that inspired it. The show of the same name looked at superheroes as well as real-life heroes in the civil rights movement that are all instructive as to how to deal with loneliness. And the goal is that, yes, we can be alone, yet we can be alone together. Petty Fong is a journalist, educator, and author. She is the Vancouver correspondent for The Economist. She was a staff reporter at the Vancouver Sun, the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star, and the CBC. She teaches journalism, ethics, and business communications at Kwantlen University, Langara College, and the University of British Columbia. This book is published by Orca Books. We spoke last Friday. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Petty Fong. Ms. Fong, good morning.
Hi, Joseph. Happy to be here with you.
Thanks for joining us. I was telling you just before we started how much I enjoyed the book because, you know, I'm probably not the audience for it, but, you know, I've listened to episodes of the podcast and going back to the book now and reading it, I found so many things useful. Like the idea that, why boredom is important, for example. I'm an only child, so growing up, it was easy to be bored or to deal with being alone. That was fine for me. A lot of people tell me, though, that that's hard for them and how to deal with boredom. I mean, we shouldn't avoid it, should we?
No, we shouldn't avoid it, and we shouldn't avoid understanding what we can learn from loneliness. So, you know, the book's title is Alone Together, and I think, you know, when we came up with the title, when those two words paired up so well for us, one of the things that we wanted to do was we didn't want to just leave it at that. So it's Alone Together, A Curious Exploration of Loneliness. And that was really important when we were putting the podcast together, that we didn't want to have a show about loneliness, but we wanted to have a show about what we can all learn together about loneliness. And that gave it this, for me, the spark of curiosity, of always being able to say, why is that? Why is that painting so important? Why are diners important? What can we learn from superheroes? What is it that we can learn from walking, whether it's walking on our own or walking with other people? So all of this came together for us into thinking about, you know, when we did the podcast and then the book with the same title was, you know, how is it that something like food, the clothes that we wear, what does that have to tell us about what we can learn together and be curious about loneliness?
You mentioned paintings and you mentioned diners. And so I automatically thought about the section in the book about Edward Hopper, because his work, you know, speaks to a lot of people about being alone, because he depicted that a great deal and so wonderfully well in his work. Even Nighthawks, you know, there are a number of people in that painting, and yet they're so isolated, and it's a perfect, you know, allusion to the title of the book, Alone Together, because they all seem alone, and they all seem together. Eating at a diner, being at a bar, I mean, these are things that, you know, are activities that are well for a single person to go do, say. We go to bars with other people, but eating at a diner especially, I mean, that's probably best experienced alone, isn't it?
Well, I think, you know, when I was looking at Nighthawks, and it came out because there was a tweet that came out from Michael Tisserand, who was a writer and in New Orleans, and he said as he was walking his dog, right in the beginning of the pandemic, in March of 2020, when the pandemic was starting, and he looked around him and he saw people in their windows. And the front cover of Alone Together, the book, those people, you know, in their homes, and some of them are looking out and some of them are in there, and you can see what's going on inside. And one of the things I think that struck me about the paintings and the artwork from Edward Hopper was that, you know, Nighthawks came together for him at a time when, you know, the Japanese bombing in Pearl Harbor had just happened. You know, there were air raids, there were blackouts all over. So it was a very similar time in some ways to what we all experienced in 2020 when the pandemic first started and there was so much uncertainty. And I think one thing that did come out was people were like, the world is going to be very different now, but we still stay who we are. And we still have this very, you know, dense, rich interior life that maybe we should start exploring, and maybe we should start to understand more about why it is that we have become a community and a society and individuals who are alone, who are lonely, and who feel isolated from other people.
That's the other thing that I learned a great deal in the book is, and I guess I knew this, but, you know, it's been a long pandemic, I guess, for a lot of people, is that loneliness, as we've learned, it is quite harmful to our well-being, and we all know stories where that's true, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the thing that you learned the most about why loneliness should be, I guess, thought about or contended with or dealt with, say?
I've always kind of, you know, when I was thinking about this topic, and I have been writing about loneliness for a long time. I first wrote about it when I was the Western Bureau Chief at the Toronto Star, and there was a study that had come out that talked about how in Vancouver, people who had been polled said that isolation was a bigger concern for them than some of the other issues that you may think about, you know, were what Vancouverites might have been thinking about. So they said social isolation was really important. And I had interviewed people who had said, you know, I remember one person had said, I had been here for 7 years, moved here from Toronto, never been invited to someone's home. And all of these stories about loneliness started to come out. And for me, you know, in covering this as a reporter, you know, I thought about the science behind it and what are some of the things that, you know, can science solve loneliness? But what I came to realize as I was doing the research for the podcast, which ran for 2 seasons on Apostrophe Network, was one of the things that we want to know about loneliness is that we can find reasons and we can find answers and we can find even more questions about it all around us. So not just through science, but through art, the music that we listen to, you know, the food that we eat, you know, the ways that we want to connect and sometimes the ways that we can't connect to other people. It has been a long pandemic. And I think that it has been, you know, we've had a number of generations now where people have felt this loneliness and this isolation that disconnects us from other people. And we're not looking for answers. And I think that what I do want to take away, what I hope readers and listeners to the podcast take away, is that loneliness is something that we all have in common. It is, I think, for me, it's an intensely personal issue, but it's also quite universal. No one I've ever talked to has ever said, oh, what's loneliness, right? Everyone has felt it in different ways. And to me, that you know, being such a private, personal, intimate feeling, but also recognizing it is a universal feeling as well.
And this book is for middle grade readers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I found that interesting because it's important to get, say, younger readers hip to these things because, I mean, you know, I remember being taught as a kid, you know, to be afraid of being alone. You know, you read that in fiction, stories of being abandoned, you know, the stories like that we were told as children. It's important to, I guess, give these ideas to kids because they'll obviously feel them, but won't know whether it's right to feel them.
You know, I wasn't intending to write it as a young adult book, but Orca Book approached me. They had heard the great editor, Christy Hudson, contacted me and said, have you thought about writing this as a young adult book? And I seriously had never thought about that. But I realized that the podcast lent itself really well to reaching out to a younger audience. Don't forget that there were some You know, people, babies who were born during the pandemic are now 5 years old, right? So some of these things that they had been born into has a huge relevance. You know, the next book that I'm working on is taking this issue of loneliness and looking at it from the business perspective, looking at it from how corporations and how innovation is going to make a difference in loneliness, hopefully, and how it is something that spans different generations. We feel loneliness at different times, at different stages in our lives, and I think that, you know, those different stages have something to tell us.
Another great lesson, and this applies not just to young readers but to adults alike, is, you know, curiosity. That's one of the things that you talk in the book about, how important it is to cultivate and maintain.
Yes.
We always lose sight of that, don't we, as we get older?
I think so, because, you know, one of the words that I you know, one of the phrases I heard was that, you know, you can't very well be bored and not curious. Mm. So curiosity, you know, it's all part of this kind of, you know, scale that we have. You know, if you're bored, you know, that can lend itself to loneliness. And if you're loneliness, you can be bored. But if you start to inch your way towards asking questions, thinking, reaching out, you're kind of moving yourself away from boredom, away from loneliness, into being curious about something else. And today I was just in the dog park. I live in Yaletown. We have a great dog park. And I was talking to someone who was told by her boss that you need to look after my dog for me. I'm going away for business. And I said, are you okay with that? And she goes, yeah, I guess it was a good thing. And I think my boss recognized that I had moved here from another country, from Mexico, and that I wasn't getting out much. So my boss made me take her dog to go for a walk.
Yeah.
And I was talking to her about it. I said, you know, what are you doing? How are you getting out there? You know, what are some of the things that you're doing? And she said that, you know, the first step for her was taking a dog and discovering her neighborhood, which she hadn't before. And I think that all of us, you know, loneliness is not anything to be ashamed of. And feeling that you don't want to connect to others, that's okay. Like, this is, there's no lecture here that everyone should be well connected and socially engaged all of the time. We all feel lonely at times. We all want to feel alone at times. But I think for people who want to reach out, for people who want to feel like they have something to contribute, that they want to hear from others, that they want to learn from others, there are opportunities for us to do that. And I would say that as a community, we all want to do that more, right? We all want to reach out more. We've just come from, and you and I were just talking about this, we've all just come from a very heavy week.
Yeah.
There's been enormous tragedy in our community. And one of the things that came out of this is that, you know, the people there really quickly understood that they weren't alone, that this tragedy had affected more than just a few couple of blocks in Vancouver, that it had affected, you know, the whole community, the whole country, internationally. So I think that this is ways, these are things that we should take away, that we are alone and we can be alone together, but we always want to have the opportunity to reach out to other people, because there are more people out there who may not be in a position to feel that they can reach out at this point.
Yeah, you alluded to this tragedy here in Vancouver the last week.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me, you know, with texts, phone calls, emails, and the sort, just asking me questions and making sure I was okay, even though, you know, I do live close to where this event happened, I didn't go this year. I was just busy that day. But, you know, at the same time, as I was processing the whole week, you know, you talk about FOMO in the book.
Right.
And, you know, that's something that I've been thinking about the last week or so, you know, because I live so close, you know, there was a chance that I could have gone. I was actually invited to go have dinner there that night, you know, amongst the food trucks. And I couldn't help, as people were asking me how I was, about, in a way, wanting to have been there.
Yeah.
You know, not during the, obviously, the tragedy, but, you know, during this happy event throughout the day, you know? And I guess that's something that we all deal with, FOMO, right? Fear of missing out.
Well, when you and I were first talking by email about when we should do this, when we should have this conversation. One of the things I said to you is, are you sure you want to do it this week? I mean, it's a really busy week, and are you doing okay, Joseph? But the more I thought about it, the more I realized it is exactly these times that we should be reaching out. And it is, you know, when these tragedies happen, and also when other things happen, that we are a community.
Yeah.
And we need to be able to talk to each other. It's one thing to be to be on your own, but it's another thing to feel that you don't have anyone else around you. And I think that any time that, you know, listeners out there to your show and in the podcast Alone Together and in the Spanish version as well, we always have this sense that people, it's not just my voice and it's not just Joseph's voice, you know, that you are hearing. You know, there are many people around, and I think the fact that, you know, we are taking in information, right, and we're taking in sound, we're taking in voices, we're taking in, you know, what people are saying, what we're reading and all of that, but we also have an opportunity to reach out. I've been a journalist my whole career, and I've been in education for the last 15 years teaching students, and to me, this building this community, it starts with you reaching out, you out there, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you out there, reach out to someone, find a community, find your community, look at what works, right? And if you don't want to be on your own, there is a community out there that needs you and wants to hear from you.
You asked me, you know, as we were chatting just before we started hitting record on this thing, about how long I've been doing this, and this is the 21st year, I guess, I've been doing it. And one of the things that I've gotten out of this whole endeavor is, you know, I've gotten to meet interesting people and you know, gotten to be friends with a number of people that, you know, that I have come to admire. And that's because, you know, I asked them to come on the program, you know, all those years ago and do an interview. In a way, you know, I love sitting at my desk or, you know, at home reading. And you know, as an only child, being solitary is not uncommon. But the opportunity to say connect over the phone, as I have, you know, has added something to my life that I don't think I would have gotten anywhere else, I think.
And I think, you know, for your readers or your listeners out there who are listening to this, you know, you may feel alone, but it isn't, because just even now, you and I talking, and to whoever is listening out there, and I know you have, you know, many listeners and fans out there, and, you know, there is community in that. You could be listening to a podcast on your own. When, you know, when the show first started, I remember the night before it launched, and I'm thinking, what's going to be the reaction? What are people going to think when they hear this? Are they going to think that it's weird that we're talking about loneliness or, you know, all of that? But I realized that, and I told myself, you know, even if just one person listened and heard what we were talking about, what the experts were sharing, it would be worth it, because I only care about reaching one person and another person. And if that person wants to reach out to someone else, that has, to me, that has been immensely rewarding in my journalism career.
So I was going to ask you about the feedback you've gotten from the podcast, from this book. I'm curious to know, what have younger readers, have you heard from them, say?
I have, and I was surprised, because I think maybe the reason why we connected was a couple of weeks ago. The Children's Book Council, which is in the United States, found that Alone Together, they had polled thousands of students in the U.S. and teachers, and Alone Together was a favorite for 6 to 8 year olds. And I thought that there was something intensely, immensely and gratifying about that, that I had no idea that so many readers had been touched by this book. It was the only Canadian book on that list. And, you know, you put something out there and you never know what the reaction is going to be. But I've heard from young readers. I've heard from young listeners. I've heard from older listeners, you know, who asked about, you know, are we going to do another season? Mm-hmm. What's the next book coming out on this? And I think people want to be able to share in that experience about being alone together.
You know, you talk about fictional characters in the book, you know, like superheroes, and how we can find a way of combating loneliness through them. What have you found in terms of the inspiration that you've been able to glean over the years to contend with whatever you're dealing with, say? I mean, who inspires you?
Oh, you know, I have to say that, you know, when we were putting the podcast together, every week I was interviewing at least five people because, you know, we interviewed experts from around the world. I think we had talked to, we had talked to over 150 people for the podcast, and they were from all over the world, including from, you know, the most remote island in the world, and also from people who were in major urban cities. And every time they talked to you, there was some inspiration about learning from someone. And I think for me, anytime I can get some spark of curiosity about, huh, why is that? What is going on there? No matter how I was feeling that day, it gave me something to say, you know, if I'm curious about this, I want to learn more about it, and I want to share that with other people. I think this ability to be curious, to learn, to share, is something that will sustain us. You know, this is a really dark and heavy time for many people. Like, I think since the pandemic, I haven't seen, you know, my neighbors, my friends, you know, people around me feeling like, you know, there was a sense of what is going on, a sense of confusion, a sense of helplessness, and a real wish to disengage. But I think what we have seen is that in those times, that's when people want to engage. That's when people want to share and have these experiences and be able to talk to each other again, because it's only through those connections that we have that we can overcome any of this darkness and feelings of being alone that we all have.
You mentioned teaching.
Yes.
And do you teach all year round?
I do. I do have a next round of classes starting next week. And one of the reasons, you know, when I talk about the opening, the introduction in Alone Together, A Curious Exploration of Loneliness, the whole idea for the book and the podcast really started because I could see that many of my students, and I teach college and university level students, many of them, once they were not in school, they have this sense of loss. They didn't know where to go. And even for many of them who were there in school, you know, we all come from these different backgrounds. We all come from these different desires of what it is that we want to do. And for many of my students, there was a real loss when they lost that ability to even just be in a classroom with other people. So I love teaching. It has been a great joy for me. I have been away from the classroom for about a month,
yeah.
And I'm going back next week and happy to be back in front of classroom with my students.
So if I get this right, you teach both at UBC, well, UBC Langara and Kwantlen, is that right?
I do, yes. So my Kwantlen classes start next week.
Yeah.
I teach in the summer, and I feel really privileged to be able to teach. I think that post-secondary right now, it's undergoing a lot of changes, and I think that these are places, colleges, universities, are places where we can build this sense of community. And I hope that if you are going back to school or thinking about school or you're about to leave school and starting your summer vacation, you know, the educators that you have in your life, you know, stay in touch with them.
Mm-hmm.
They really care about what you're doing, and any time that we can gather in an educational setting, I think that that's where we can build real communities.
So I was just going to ask if you get enough time off during the year.
I have to say that teaching really invigorates me. Like, I felt a sense of loss. Like, I'm putting, you know, I'm working on another book right now. I am talking to other people about, you know, Alone Together, the young adult book, putting together the second book on this. But I miss that interaction with my students, and I'm really happy to be in classrooms and to always have this opportunity to ask my students, what are you doing? What's up with your life? What's going on? So some of them are graduating in June. You know, some of them have convocations coming up, and I always feel a little sad when they leave, but also looking forward to the next classes that are coming in.
Now, you also write still, right? I mean, you still practice journalism, obviously.
I'm still a journalist. I'm the Vancouver writer for The Economist magazine. I think journalism, once you're in journalism, and those who have read my byline, you know, I was a journalist for many, many years at the Vancouver Sun, the Globe and Mail, and the Toronto Star, and even the CBC. You're always a journalist. You're always looking around and saying, oh, there's a story there. I was at the opera last Saturday when we heard about what happened, and I was with a friend of mine who is a police officer, and we were like, we should go out there and see. And we could see around us that around, you know, the intermission when the opera had this pause, that was when the news first started coming in. There were people who left to go. You know, I think there are people who worked in hospitals, people who worked in policing. And so, you know, when tragedies like what happened on Saturday happen, there are people around who, you know, they do what they can to help. And I think that we're really lucky to live in a society, in a community like that.
Yeah. So I remember seeing your byline through the 90s as I was growing up, you know, in the Vancouver Sun. Well, the early 90s in the Sun, was that your first experience in journalism?
No. I grew up in Calgary, Alberta, and I did my undergraduate in Regina, Saskatchewan. So my first byline, I was the youth columnist for the Calgary Herald, and this was in the 1980s. So that was my first byline. I think I was 14 when I got my first byline in the Calgary Herald. But even before then, growing up, a child of immigrants, my parents had a grocery store in Calgary. So I used to sell papers. I used to sell newspapers. So that's been my experience. So I worked for the Calgary Herald as a youth columnist in the 1980s, and I went and did my journalism degree at the University of Regina, where I was. I came out and I covered agriculture.
What was it for you that you wanted to pursue journalism? Because I'm sure, you know, as you just said, your family didn't work in that field. I mean, was there someone that inspired you to want to go into this business, eh?
My father was a journalist. Journalist in Hong Kong for Tsingtao newspaper. And then he came out here. We came out here as immigrants in the 1970s. And he couldn't get a job in journalism. So, of course, he did what many immigrants do. We opened a grocery store. We sold newspapers, and many of the people who bought newspapers and who were around, many of them had worked at the Calgary Herald and the Calgary Sun. And so that was how I got my first dip into journalism. So I think me being a child of immigrants, I was always told to go and find out what happened, right? So me and my siblings, if there was a traffic jam, and I remember one time there was a traffic was at standstill, and my father sent me out to say, go find out what's going on. So I think I was 5 or 6 at the time, and I came back and I said, it's something called the Santa Claus Parade. that was how we found out about Santa Claus parades. But, you know, when you're the child of immigrants, your job is to find out what's going on, right? And my siblings and I had to go out there, and we had to be able to kind of be out there, find out what's going on, bring it back, and tell the rest of us what was happening. And I think for me, that innate curiosity of being able to go out and ask questions, find out what's going on, and report back objectively, you know, so that, you know, we could determine, is the Santa Claus parade, that's something we should all go see. You know, that was something I think that has always made me love journalism. And I've never done anything else. You know, I've done journalism, and I've never regretted it. Not one day have I ever thought, I wish I wasn't a journalist.
I was going to ask you about working with apostrophe. I mean, we all know that, you know, that's the O'Reillys, especially, you know, we all know Terry O'Reilly. What was it like working with them to produce the show?
Oh, my gosh. That was an incredible experience. And Terry O'Reilly, I've been writing my whole career, right? As a newspaper reporter, this is what you do every day. And I was actually a night reporter and a deadline reporter. So I write a lot. I learned so much about writing for the ear from Terry O'Reilly, and he is a gifted and such, he was an incredible mentor to me in learning how to write for the ear. And then Callie O'Reilly, who was the director of the show, really was able to let me, you know, use my voice and to be able to say what I wanted to say. And she has an incredible ear. Both of both Terry and Callie have an incredible ear that, you know, I had to learn about and learn how to develop. But, you know, when I was writing some of the episodes, I remember one time, and I keep Terry O'Reilly's notes, right? When he told me that he thought the boredom episode was his favorite episode, man, that just felt like I had been given like some kind of benediction in some way. And I just felt it was an incredible experience. And I will never forget the lessons that I've learned from my friends at Apostrophe, the way sound works, you know, the incredible sound engineer, Jeff Devine. We had incredible producers, Guillermo Serrano, who actually took the show and made it into a Spanish version of the show called Juntos a Soledad, which did very well in Mexico and the South American markets.
So will there be another show or another season, say?
I get asked that. You know, I have to say I get asked that question. Usually every couple of weeks someone writes and says, when is the next season coming out? It was a lot of work. Yeah. I think it could only have been done during the pandemic when I was teaching at home, when my classes were online. I loved every minute of it, and I would love to do another season. Maybe. Let me know. Let me know what you think out there, listeners. Should we do another season? I'd love to get some of your thoughts on that. I hear from a lot of listeners who want another season.
And then you said you're working on another book, right?
We're working on a not young adult book on the same topics about, you know, what businesses can learn. And I think that a lot of the most innovative thinking and the innovative ways that things have been transformed have been from people who were lonely thinkers, people who thought differently. So, you know, that's the next book, and hopefully that will be out next year.
Well, we'll await that, and until then, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed talking to you today. I really appreciate your time. I've been a fan, obviously, for many years. This book is just great, and congratulations on it, and continued good luck with everything else.
Thanks you so much, Joseph. I've been a big fan of yours.
The book is called Alone Together, A Curious Exploration of Loneliness. It's published by Orca Books. Its author, Petty Fong, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.